Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You're listening to a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
It's been hailed as Christopher Nolan's ultimate masterpiece. It has grossed nearly $1 billion worldwide, and it's gone on to win the biggest awards in Hollywood.
And Maria is C. Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer has 13 nominations and has won 7 Oscars tonight for actor in a supporting role, film editing, cinematography, original score, actor in a leading role, directing, and best picture.
The movie centers around J. Robert Oppenheimer, who's often called the father of the atomic bomb.
The important thing isn't can you read music, it's can you hear it. Can you hear the music, Robert? Yes, I can.
The film premiered in July 2023, coinciding with the release of another blockbuster, Barbie.
It's the double feature no one saw coming. Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan's epic about the creation of the atomic bomb, going head to head with a movie that could not be more different.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Ken.
Last summer, U.S. social media was awash with Barbenheimer memes, including one that superimposed actors from Barbie and Oppenheimer on top of an image of a nuclear blast. That particular post was even liked by Warner Bros. Online. The promotional campaign triggered fierce backlash in Japan, with the hashtag NoBarbenheimer trending across the island nation.
What are other genocide cases which can be translated into pop culture like this?
Warner Bros. Later issued an apology, and Oppenheimer's premiere had been indefinitely delayed in Japan. Until now. The 3-hour-long film is finally hitting the silver screen there on March 29th. I'm Brian Wood, here to talk about Asia. I sat down with Yuki Miyamoto, a professor at DePaul University in Chicago, who teaches nuclear ethics. She shared her thoughts on the movie and her personal connection to the human suffering caused by Oppenheimer's atomic bomb. So the first question that we'll get into is, of course, did you watch Oppenheimer? And what are your thoughts on the film?
I have watched 3 times in the theater, and this is because DePaul Humanities Center, in collaboration with Plowshares Fund, which is a big anti-nuclear organization, and the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, which actually Oppenheimer helped to establish, which is located in Chicago, and the Japanese Arts Foundation, whose director is my former student. And so 4 of us organized the screening of Oppenheimer in Chicago. And I was one of the panelists, so I had to see the film beforehand. And then at the panel, I saw it again. And actually, very luckily, we had 700 seats sold out. So we were asked to come back in the following week. Slightly different panelists, but I was on the panel as well. So then I saw that 3rd time there, and I got a DVD, mainly because I wanted to see the special features. So I have seen a couple of times. And before the movie, I had hoped that this film would kind of reignite or rekindle the discussion of the nuclear issues, especially among the youth, because my students think that nuclear stuff is about the 80s or even 50s. So I was hoping that it would happen. But unfortunately, the film didn't really rekindle the issue in a way that I would have hoped for. What I meant by that is, you might remember Barbenheimer memes. This is not my word, but the film refers to this project as a weapon of mass destruction and as a weapon of genocide. And I just couldn't help thinking, What are other genocide cases which can be translated into pop culture like this? Like there was a t-shirt of Barbenheimer and coffee mug and also Barbenheimer memes, of course. And I just can't think of any other genocide cases or genocide incidents that has been treated like this. And then I started thinking that the movie didn't really show the victim side. And so people probably don't know much about what exactly the bombs did, especially to the human body and the environment. And also I was concerned about the viewers identifying themselves with the protagonist, Oppenheimer. I think it's good to humanize him and it's good to depict his suffering. But in order to understand his suffering, we have to know what he did or what happened to the victims.
Yes. I want to go into that a bit because I kind of want to break it up into there's like the Barbenheimer aspect and then there's the Oppenheimer story. And of course, the third aspect, which is the victim story, the devastation that the bomb caused across Japan, the legacy of that. So let's kind of focus first on the Barbenheimer marketing. You weren't the only person who found this distasteful. How did the Japanese public respond to the Barbenheimer meme? And the way that it was depicted in popular culture?
I think it has not been much known. Like, for example, in the United States, many American comic heroes, they gained this superhuman power by coming into contact with radiation or radioactive materials.
Okay, let's do this one last time, yeah? For real this time. This is it. My name is Miles Morales. I was bitten by a radioactive spider, and for like 2 days, I've been the one and only Spider-Man. I think you know the rest.
So that's already embedded in pop culture, but that is not so much realized, I guess in the States either, but more so in Japan. There's not much information how the atomic bomb has been understood in the United States. Or has not been understood in the United States. So I think that Barbenheimer memes were a kind of a shock to people in Japan.
Yeah, and it seemed like there was an outcry online about that, which led to part of the reason why it was even delayed in premiering. Okay, so Oppenheimer, of course, this is supposed to be about him, right? And based on a book about him. So what did you feel was missing specifically from Oppenheimer's real story and missing in the movie? How did you feel about that?
Right. I think there are two things. One is title and one is victim's story, obviously. And, as you know, this movie is based upon the book, his biography, American Prometheus. And I really like the title because Prometheus is the symbol of a bringer of fire, as well as a kind of perpetual self-destruction.
You could lift the stone without being ready for the snake that's revealed.
We have to make the politicians understand this isn't a new weapon. It's a new world. I'll be out there doing what I can, but you are an American Prometheus, the man who gave them the power to destroy themselves, and they'll respect that.
I think it really gets to the core of the nuclear weapons. Meaning, if you have nuclear weapons, you will destruct yourselves. And then this is what is missing in the film Oppenheimer, which is Alamogordo.
For months, scientists and technicians had been making this trip from Los Alamos, 200 miles south, to the Alamogordo bombing range to prepare for the Trinity test.
As if there was no one there, but actually there were 13,000 people living within 50-mile radius. And they were suffering. And another story is there were 10 girls were camping and they had nuclear fallout. It looks like a little white particle and they thought it was snow and snow in summer and they were playing with it. But actually that was nuclear fallout. And what happened to them was all but one died from cancer before they reached 30 years old. So, you know, those victim stories never appeared in the film. But if we think of this title, American Prometheus, and what Prometheus symbolizes, I think it's a great representation of the nuclear weapons. If you have it, you will destroy yourselves.
And now I am become death. The destroyer of worlds.
So, you know, I've actually felt pretty ignorant to something in research leading up to this conversation. And it's quite embarrassing as an American myself to not know a lot about the history of the atomic bomb and Oppenheimer's real story, even after seeing the movie. I found that he was on the target committee leading up to the decision to drop the first bomb. Could you tell us about that?
Right. Well, I'm not quite sure how much Oppenheimer had a say to it, but definitely Hiroshima was one of the target cities from the very beginning. And as you know, Kyoto was one of them, but Stimson had a honeymoon there and he thought that it was a lovely city. We shouldn't destroy it.
We have a list of 12 cities to choose from. Sorry, 11. I've taken Kyoto off the list due to its cultural significance to the Japanese people. Also, my wife and I honeymooned there. It's a magnificent city.
And that's how Kyoto was saved. But because of that, you know, many cities from small to middle to big cities like Tokyo had been already aerated. So like 5 months before the atomic bombings on March 10th of 1945, Tokyo had a big air raid and incendiary bombs were dropped, so many of them, and 50% of the city had been obliterated.
Why was it necessary to drop the nuclear bomb if LeMay was burning up Japan? And he went on from Tokyo to firebomb other cities.
If you have seen the movie The Fog of War, there was a great scene which is comparing Tokyo is comparable to New York.
Tokyo is roughly the size of New York. 51% of New York destroyed. 99% of the equivalent of
the
Shattano,
cities after cities on. Came in the screen.
40% of the equivalent of Los Angeles, which was Nagoya. This was all done before the dropping of the nuclear bomb.
So all those cities had been bombed, yet Hiroshima was intact. Because it was on the list. And because scientists and politicians and people wanted to see the result and the consequences and the impact on the city. So it was intact. But I'm saying this, it's not because I'm not blaming the U.S. alone, you know, Japanese government. So many cities had been obliterated. So many young people were sent as suicide pilots. And they didn't stop the war.
So let's go back to one of the things that you pointed out that Oppenheimer notably omits, which is the human suffering in Hiroshima, Nagasaki. And I, of course, reading up on your story and some of your past interviews, if you wouldn't mind maybe sharing your personal connection to that.
Sure. I was born and grew up in Hiroshima. And many of my generations, you know, kids have one or two family members as a hibakusha, which is referred to people who suffered from the atomic bombings. So that's how I kind of grew up. But my mother was actually a mile away from the hypocenter, and she was 6 years old. And then her family, the rest of the families were at home. Her mother and her little sister were at home. Her father, who is my grandfather, was coming from the hospital after the night shift. And that's where he witnessed the bombing. My grandfather didn't have visible external injuries, but my grandfather died 2 weeks after the bombing due to acute radiation sickness. And I don't know if you might have seen the photo of young soldier who has purple spots on face, and that's kind of the syndrome of acute radiation sickness. And he had those spots before he died. And my mother didn't tell me about her experience. So I've learned about her experience from my aunts. So I don't know much about right after, immediately after that, and if she felt sick or nothing, no information. But in her 30s, she had Meniere disease. And in her 40s, because radiation, I guess, affected blood-producing organs, so she was not able to produce healthy blood. So she had to take this kind of blood booster shots every other week. So that was her 40s and 50s. And she got cancer. She passed away at the age of 62. So she's not very healthy throughout her life, even though she was 6 years old.
Thank you for sharing that. It's, you know, important to understand that this is something that continues to affect people, and that people today in Japan and elsewhere live with the effects of radiation and witnessing what they saw. So Oppenheimer premieres soon in Japan. It performed extremely well in the U.S. and even went on to win the top awards at the Oscars. So how do you think that the film will be received in Japan? Is the audience adverse to films like this, or do you think it'll be a hit like it was in the U.S.?
I've been hearing very different opinions. Some people think that it's inappropriate to show the film in Japan, and others think it's good to make this film in the States now. I think that it's great that the film is released, because it shows what Hiroshima and Nagasaki is placed in American mind. In other words, there's no hibakusha, there's no victims there. And that's what the master narrative in the United States, which people in Japan needed to know, wants to know. So I guess in that sense, I think it's good. I'm welcoming that the film is going to be released in Japan. Since it has Oscar Academy Awards, people might be interested in seeing it. And some people might identify themselves with Oppenheimer, which I'm actually very much concerned about. Again, I would like to repeat this. I'm not saying humanizing Oppenheimer is bad. I'm not saying that. I think it's good. And I think it's good to understand people who inflicted harms on others. They also suffer. That's good to know. That's important to know, actually. However, that understanding needs to precede the victim's suffering. Unless we know what happened to the victims, our understanding of the perpetrator's suffering is shallow. And I think it's the same for Japanese atrocities, too. I think it's important to know that Japanese soldiers who suffered and traumatized, and sometimes that trauma can be intergenerational. But more important thing is what actually caused that trauma. What did they do in Asian countries? You know, so in that way, this movie kind of mirrors Japanese way of facing the past. But I've been hearing, you know, some people are very upset that this is going to be shown in Japan. Others are more welcoming.
Okay, so how do Japanese-made films about the atomic bomb compare to Oppenheimer or Western-made films about this subject? Do they center the victims in this?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Japanese films often focus on hibakusha. However, the tendency of those films, the narrative centers around women and children's experiences. Because, you know, some Japanese people want to emphasize their victimhood in order to cover up their victimizer's side. And women's and children's stories perfectly fit in that agenda. and sometimes romanticization of women's suffering too, you know, all those different aspects. But there is a movie about Japanese project of making an atomic bomb as well.
戦局を変える新型爆弾が必要です。
Atomic bomb.
They were also trying to make an atomic bomb at the time of the war. However, they were way, way behind. There was no perspective that they could actually make it. However, nonetheless, they didn't completely give up like Germany did. So there was a movie of that as well.
今研究してるもんが完成すれば戦争は終わる。 世界を変えられる。
So with all this talk about Oppenheimer and what it's missed and how Japan will receive it, I want to ask you, what would you want to see in a film about this subject?
I would like to see that people who suffered from this project, not at the time alone, not just the 1945, but subsequent years, I would like to see them to be humanized, not just the numbers, but they have their own stories. And I also wondered, you know, in the 21st century, we have so many stories coming from different perspectives, right? Did you see Beef?
Yeah.
You started this.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay, you're the one who backed into me like a psycho.
You're the one that flipped me off all roided out and
Or Reservation Dogs. I think that's also indigenous kids, right?
Oh, creator. Thank you for these sacred tater tots that my nephew, grandson, grandpa here has given me. Take care of his little heart like that and his cholesterol in that good way. Aho.
Like, there are so many stories coming from different perspectives. Different meaning, I guess presupposing that many stories were made out of white male perspective. Whereas now we have varieties of perspectives. And that's what we are celebrating recently. And now we have this story. And even though, you know, it's because 1940s, it doesn't mean that there were no indigenous people there. You know, there was always diversities. Not just indigenous people, but Hispanic descendants living there, those Ten girls. But also in Hiroshima, 10% of Hibakusha came from the Korean Peninsula, you know, because at that time, Korean Peninsula was under Japan's occupation or colonization. So they were either forced to come to Japan as a cheap labor or just economically because Japan was confiscating their rice, which is staple food. So they were looking for jobs and they came. So either way, forcefully, they came to Japan and they happened to be in Hiroshima. And they tend to be working not in the building, but often outside, kind of labor jobs. So they tend to get more blasts or heat or radiation. So 10% of the victims came from the Korean Peninsula, and there were 10 American POWs. Some of them were beaten up to death by angry Hiroshima citizens right after the bomb. And in Nagasaki, there were 150 Dutch soldiers, POWs, prisoners of wars. And they were called Dutch, but they were actually captured in Indonesia because Indonesia was back then the Netherlands colony. So they were doubly colonized and then brought to Japan. So some of them were local people in Indonesia, and then they were brought to Japan, to Nagasaki, and they suffered from the bombing. So there were layers of the history of colonization of the world. Of course, Japan was one of them. And of course, there were some Chinese people who suffered in Nagasaki. And so those marginalized voices, it seems to me it's important because it shows, as I said, the core of nuclear weapons, which is it's self-destructive, but also it's indiscriminate. And so I just wondered why we are not enjoying per se, but we are valuing this story with a perspective of white elite person. And I'm not saying, you know, Oppenheimer was never being discriminated. He was, he's a Jewish person. There was some anti-Semitism, and anti-communism overlaps with anti-Semitism. So definitely he's suffering, especially toward the end of the movie. But it's a different kind of suffering, it seems to me, like he's a wealthy scientist. So I just wondered, in the 21st century, we have so many opportunities to understand the historical event from varieties of perspectives. And why now this story, like his perspective? That's something I just keep asking to myself.
So you were born in Hiroshima, you grew up there, it's a familiar place for you. But you also lead study tours to Hiroshima. What do your students say about that experience? Do they discover something about the city that they otherwise might not have known from just reading a textbook or watching a film?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Actually, every time I go there with my students, because for me, it's so like I grew up here, so I feel like even though I haven't lived there for 30 years, I felt like there's nothing new, you know. It's not true. There is always something new. But the students always make me see the city with new eyes. And I always feel the power of the place. And we also meet survivors, hibakusha, in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That's also very impactful to students. For example, if you go to Hiroshima Peace Park, there is a peace dome, which is a kind of a symbol in Hiroshima, the symbol of the atomic bombing, which is a part of Peace Park. And next to it, there is a river running through. And one student went down to the river when the river is, the tide was low. So he was able to get to the bottom of the river. And he found a little piece of glass or some clay or something, and it has all spikes. And he was wondering what it was, and he brought it to the curator of the museum, and it was actually a piece of roof tiles back then in 1945. And because of the heat, it all melted and spiked up. So he kind of felt that this actually happened here, and that kind of connects him to this historical event. So upon returning to Chicago, he started this petition, you know, went to the cafeteria, stood on the chair, and please sign. And what he did was get the mayor, back then mayor of Chicago was Daley, so Mayor Daley to join Mayors for Peace, which aims at abolition of nuclear weapons. So it's got such power, and I didn't even imagine. So that's something I'm very grateful for my students.
That was Yuki Miyamoto from DePaul University. You can learn more about Japan at scmp.com. I'm Brian Wood. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.